Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Gabrielle. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to meet you.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a writer and an editor. I have lived in New York City since 2007. I currently live in Brooklyn with my fiance and our two dogs, though we're moving to LA in the spring because I just took a new job at Netflix. And my first book is coming out on January 26th.
Congratulations on your job. Congratulations on me. I feel like everyone's been moving out of New York. So I moved to New York in 2006 and we had a similar trajectory. I didn't go to NYU for school, but I went to work at NYU. So I work at some student affairs area. So I worked for a couple of years at NYU. Yeah. So I'm familiar with the Gallatin world, you know, and all the different things that happen. So I love that your book kind of like took me to those, I don't know, 14, 15 years in New York. Just enjoying that whole process.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely a very specific thing.
It is. Yeah, it's like, unless you're there and you know, and like the different cultures, you're just like, I don't know, like it's definitely, it's hard to explain to people outside of the bubble, like what it's like, or, you know, the different experiences that you get to go through.
Yeah, I think like it's not college is the first thing people need to know. It's like you're taking classes and living in New York City and fending for yourself.
Yes. Yes. It's like it's not a college experience. Like, yeah, you may live in a dorm, but you have the city. Like there are like Greek life here, but the reality is it's not the same. Like you're competing, you don't have frat parties where you just go to frat house and all those different things. You go to, you know, clubs and things and concerts and all those different things that happen in New York City. So, and the Gallatin program is unique enough that you get to create your own major. So, which is like, it's interesting to see like the different majors that people come up with, because you just get to explore your own interests and your college experience.
Yeah, totally. And in hindsight, I don't know if like 18-year-olds should be in charge of their own education to that degree. Yeah. Like, I think I might have really benefited from an actual curriculum that I had to do.
Yeah.
I've never been very good at like participating in things. And so I thought that that meant that I would be okay kind of forging my own path. And I think instead I ended up feeling pretty lost most of the time.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think it's weird. Like I went to liberal arts college and like I had the college experience. And so it was weird to be, you know, the adult working with the college students. I know it comes with this like very esoteric, you know, majors. And I'm just like, what are you going to do with it? You
know? Right. And they don't give you any help with that.
No.
You're just like, hey, have fun.
Have fun. Just pick your classes. See what you like.
Yeah. So. And then like a month after you graduate, they start calling you for money and you're like, but I'm unemployed because of you.
Pretty much, because I had to explain this whole, you know, major that doesn't make any sense to the future employer that's hiring me.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So let's talk about your experience in Ireland. Actually, you worked for Friday 29. Let's go back. You wanted to be a writer, and then you start freelancing and then got Refinery 29 and then Nyland. How was your experience working in the magazine and just basically just being an editor help you write your first book?
I think it taught me how to write in a way that is engaging. I think, you know, I had learned how to write academically and intellectually, but in school, you don't really learn how to write for like real people. So learning, cutting my teeth with writing for the internet, it trained me, and it trained me to trust my own voice, mm-hmm. which I think is, you know, comes across very strongly in my book. It's very, very voicey. It definitely, if you know me, it definitely sounds like me. And that is very much what my writing for the internet was too. It was very opinionated, very sarcastic. The thing that was challenging was that when you learn to write for magazines and for the internet, you learn how to make things as short and as snappy as possible. Mm-hmm. And when you're writing a book, you have to elaborate and expand and go deeper. And that was actually a challenge for me, because my feeling was like, well, I said it, like I made my point. No one's going to keep reading. And then mm-hmm. I had to remember like, oh, wait, they're holding the book in their hands. They're not like scrolling through Twitter. It's a different experience. Mm-hmm. So I think it both helped me and broke my brain a little bit.
Yeah, I love the fact that I felt like I can see your voice and I can see your experience. And I felt like I was just talking to a friend about your experience, you know, just growing up and learning how to be an adult, you know, and then being an adult within this internet world that was just like, that was there was a lot of expectations. And I think it was fascinating. Like I can see how I can translate to first person, you know, short articles and snappy and sarcastic, you know, but it felt really good to just like sit down and be like, okay, let me just get to know a little bit deeper beyond what we see, you know, on the internet.
Yeah, that was the hope.
Yeah. So what was your journey to get this first book published?
I actually got really lucky. I got a cold email from the person who became my agent, and she said that she had been following my writing and was wondering if I had ever considered writing a book. And, you know, of course I had, I've always wanted to write a book, but all I had were just kind of like notes that I had been taking in like my notes app on my phone and Google Doc, like not, I wouldn't even say it was organized enough to be considered journaling. It was just kind of like word vomiting every time something happened. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to her and I was like, look, like I have this like very vague idea for what a book would be, but I don't have anything. And she was like, do you have notes? and I said, yeah. So I sent her what I had been working on, and she helped me turn it into a very lengthy proposal. And the proposal took about 6 months. We did 5 sample chapters, like a pretty cohesive marketing plan. And then once the proposal was submitted, it happened really, really quickly. And within, I would say, a week, there was an auction day. And then I had my offers, and then it, you know, and then I had a book deal. I felt very fortunate that it was so easy.
That's amazing. And then you had to write the book. And I know. Do it while you were working like nonstop. So how did you manage to complete this project while, you know, doing all the other things you were supposed to be doing?
I wrote the first draft of it on the subway, because that ended up being my like longest stretches of alone time. Mm-hmm. I was commuting from Bed-Stuy to Soho, and so I had about 45 minutes at the beginning and the end of each day. Mm-hmm. And I would just kind of bang it out on my phone. And then when I had time at night or on weekends, would try to like arrange it into something that looked like chapters. Mm-hmm. It felt like chaos. But then luckily the final draft of it was due about a month after I had left Nylon when I was unemployed. So I spent that whole month just kind of like sitting on the couch, holding my computer, finishing it.
That's amazing. So let's talk about, you wrote essays and about your life experience. And so did you have was it a stream of consciousness, or did you have an idea like which essays will make it, you know, through the book?
That's a good question. I think it was a combination of both, because I the way I process tough situations is that I do stream of consciousness writing. And so I had that content kind of like spread out over everything. Like I just had it in all corners of all of my devices. There were these little paragraphs that I had plopped down in moments of anxiety. So that was very stream of consciousness. But then in order to sell a book, you like this, you do need an outline and you do need to be able to say, these are the chapters. This is what I would say in them, because otherwise it's like, yeah, anyone can have a great idea, but how would you actually see it through? So I had the outline, which was really, really helpful. And I, some of the chapters ended up changing, some of them I got rid of. But I was able to take a few years worth of like just brain dumps and put them into something a little more organized.
So let's talk about your experience on Island, because you made a huge impact with their, you know, you share about like work-life balance, the changing, you know, the landscape of the people you work with, you know, the expectations, even just, you know, asking for a raise. Like, how does this experience shape who you are now?
Oh, I think in so many ways, it has shaped who I am now. I experienced success really early in my career. And in order to get there, I really sacrificed my emotional and physical well-being as well as my personal life. And it's a mistake that I will never make again. Like for all of the good that me and my team did, for all of the people we reached, in the end, I had to sacrifice myself to do it. And I think I'll never do that again for something that's not mine. Mm-hmm. Like it, you know, it wasn't my company and I was expected to run it as though it was. And I did. And all I did was work for basically 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then I had to leave the job anyway. So I, on the one hand, I feel like now I know that I have the ability to fight for change and see those changes through. And I also know that I'm allowed to set boundaries and I'm allowed to take care of myself while I do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I can identify with that idea, like, you know, the years of being a workaholic or just pushing and then putting your physical and mental well-being on the sidetrack. Like that's something that I experienced myself for, I would say the first 4 years in New York. That was my life. I had an eating disorder too. And so I had to, similar to your experience, to take a break from it, you know, choose to be unemployed and then, you know, take a path and be like, okay, what fits, what doesn't fit. And so talking about eating disorder that have, you know, that struggle, I'm more curious about your recovery process, because you explain part of the process. You explain how expensive it is, like the whole, you know, the recalibration of, you know, of the experience, like how do you actually go through it, like to live a life that you're not controlled by not eating.
Yeah, it was really expensive to get treatment. And yes. It was expensive and it was also very vulnerable because I had to subject myself to strangers. Mm-hmm. And as I wrote about in the book, like that was not always a positive experience. I had some really bad experiences with the people who were supposed to be helping me. And so between that and the money, like I was in therapy, I started seeing a nutritionist and they wanted me to start seeing an eating disorder specialist. And then I started seeing a psychiatrist and it was like, I had no money at the end of like the month. And it was like, why am I killing myself at work doing this job that has literally like broken my brain and given me an eating disorder, and then having to spend all the money I'm making at this awful job like fixing what is broken? It was so infuriating once that became clear, and it felt like a trap that I had fallen into, and it felt like I couldn't really pinpoint when exactly I had started believing the things that I stood against. Mm-hmm. But it happened. And I think once you have had a period in your life of disordered eating, I don't think the feelings ever really go away. I think it just becomes, you know, something you carry with you and something that you have to be really mindful of and really intentional about, and just figure out how to take care of yourself in a way that's actually taking care of yourself and not in a way that is, you know, like self-care that's actually harm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a fine line of self-care. It's a fine line of thinking like I'm eating healthy or I'm doing this. And you realize like, is it creating harm or is it nourishing? Is it actually something good for you or is it something that's just like harmful? But in the spirit of we're trying to, you know, live in this world. But I think so much of, you know, I think you mentioned the world of media and the expectations to be perfect, like the expectation to have this perfect body and not inclusive and all these different things, you know, really are harmful things that doesn't help the disordered eating, you know.
Right. And no one ever said it to me explicitly, but it was very real that the skinnier I got, the more attention I got, the more successful I was, the more I was asked to be on camera doing videos, the more I was photographed on the street. It was like the correlation between my skinniness and my visibility was 100%. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, I have to admit, like, I think I'm grateful for the recovery, you know, like the whole process of it, but it's like I remember how much it took a toll on me, the whole process, because you just have to, it's so vulnerable, you know, just putting yourself out there and breaking down things that are, you know, that don't make sense, like, you know, why, you know, being skinny was something that was rewarded and then being like, okay, but that's not helpful, you know, and just going through the process of it. So
totally. And I remember having a conversation with my doctor where she was kind of like going through with me meal by meal how much I needed to eat so that I could gain weight, and I just kept saying like, but I don't want to gain weight. And she was like, but that's why you're here, you idiot.
Yes. Yes. I don't know. I just remember for me, it was like learning how to eat. Like,
yeah.
I was like, I don't want to do, I think you mentioned a banana bread. And I was like, I had a similar experience. And I was like, why do I have this? Like, you know, I'm like, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm like a little child, like having a temper tantrum. Like, I don't want to learn how to eat. You know, I don't want to
completely
what I'm eating and share with somebody else, like, you know. And that's just, yeah, that's like part of recovery, you know.
Yeah, I found it totally humiliating.
Yeah. Okay. So all right, so you're moving to LA, you're starting a job, any upcoming projects that you're looking for?
Well, I mean, this book is a big one. I have been working on a second book, which I'm too superstitious to talk about further than that.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of like new big things happening for me. And I feel very, very fortunate that in a year where like it feels like the world is falling apart, like good things are happening to me. Like, I got engaged on New Year's Eve. I got this new job. My book, the book publication date was moved. It was supposed to come out in June and we moved it to January, but that, even that feels like a good thing. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I've just been writing, trying to write a novel and seeing how it goes.
Oh, this is so exciting. Nice to see you're dabbling into fiction, you know? So.
Yeah, well, it's like I wanted to be really honest with myself about why I wanted to write in the first place. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, and even when I was in college, I only ever thought about fiction. Mm-hmm. Like, I always took creative writing classes. I always read novels. Like, I didn't even think about journalism until I needed to make money. Mm-hmm. So I I wanted to try to honor that kind of like organic feeling and see if I can do it. So we'll see.
I love this. Oh my gosh, I can't wait. So, thank you. Tell us where you can find me online.
I am on Twitter at Gabrielle_Korn, K-O-R-N, and I'm on Instagram at Gabrielle Korn.
Thank you, Gabrielle, for being in the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so great talking to you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatyourextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTOREAD10 to save. Visit whatyourextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.